segment more into issues of modernization and transforming legacy applications into more modern ones. And in order to transform an application, you need to understand it. And that's what this is about, is figuring out ways to understand that mess that you already have. So this is the agenda we're going to go through. We're going to talk a little bit about what the problem is that we're facing, what tools we have had, how we go beyond those existing tools, why it is that I'm focusing on UML as a vehicle for doing for understanding your application, show you what I've developed for a UML profile for ABL and what exactly that means, a quick look at ABL to UML, which is a tool that I created. We're going to look at first the version that exists today. There's another version coming out probably this summer, which will go on beyond that, and so I'll talk about that a bit. So first, let's talk about the problem. All kinds of legacy ABL systems out there. In fact, there's the number of really modernized ABL applications is extremely small. Millions and millions of lines of ABL code. There are no small number of people who have in some way become orphaned from their bar that they originally bought the application from, either because the bar has gone away or the relationship has become poor, or most commonly simply because they have customized the code so heavily themselves that they can no longer accept any new releases from the their original source. A great many of these code bases have been going through 5, 10, 15, 20 years worth of modifications internally. Those are often rushed, they're often spot, they're often inadequate development teams to really, you know, do a nice systematic job. But just, you know, oh, we need this, and just reach in there and make a change. All of which has been done generally without documentation. There wasn't any documentation to start with. Nobody documented the changes, so nobody has any idea what's going on. Maybe some person who's been there for years, and they're the repository for understanding what it is that how things work. And of course, they've only ever touched a small part of the application themselves, so how can they really understand the whole thing? And of course, if that person retires or gets a better offer someplace, all of a sudden nobody has any idea what's going on. And one of the patterns of this, I think, is that because ABL has been upwardly compatible since day one, nobody is ever forced into doing a rewrite. And so stuff stays the way that it was 20 years ago. And moreover, people look at the code and say, well, that's how you do it. And so they write more code that looks like that. And one of the things that's encouraged is a very low cost of ownership for an ABL application. And instead of having managers decide, oh, I'm not having to spend a lot of money on that, so I'm going to have more developers so we can do more things. Instead, they skimp on the developers too. And then get shocked when the big bills come in. Often that situation will go on for years that way without any big waves. And it's difficult to establish change in that kind of environment. But if something comes along to change that, then you end up with a real crisis. You end up with somebody who decides, gee, you know, this character application just isn't cutting mustard anymore. Or this Win95 style GUI is not cutting mustard anymore. And Of course, you get this that becomes a real difficult problem because the UI code, the business logic, and the DA layer are all wrapped up together in one big ball of spaghetti. And so pulling out and changing the UI alone is just almost insurmountable task. There are other drivers. There are various forces that drive people to need an SOA. Maybe they're trying to web-enable part of their application or make something accessible to customers. And so they need to go to a more service-oriented architecture. And of course, that's not what they had. They started off with one form of that supply chain integration, web services, or you know, you get around to decide that you have one particular subsystem and there's some big change in requirements there. You're going to really bite the bullet and finally get down to rewrite that subsystem. And then you find out that that subsystem is linked into everything else, and so you can't really just change that one piece easily. So, tools. Some shops have ERD tools. There are a few progress-aware ERD tools. Of course, that only covers the schema. None of them create the relationships between the tables automatically because that information is not in the OpenEdge database. So that doesn't really work. And of course, what the schema is what somebody thought the schema ought to be years ago, and it may have little to do with how the application is actually used, so that you end up with whole tables that aren't even used, fields that aren't even used, indexes that aren't used, accesses to tables that are not using indexes, all kinds of stuff. So you don't really know what's actually going on in the world. There's a compile XREF tool that comes with Progress. That tells you about the code, not the schema. Tells you about indexes. Doesn't tell you about the where clause. A number of ISVs have included some kind of tool in their tool set to systematically database the cross-reference data so that you can query it, because otherwise you're looking at one program at a time, which doesn't really tell you much about where used and the connections and between things. But those ISV tools are often very incomplete compared to the amount of information that's actually in XREF today. And one of the big holes is there's a varying amount of dynamic calls in different applications. We'll talk more about dynamic calls in a moment, but there's no dynamic call resolution available there. So how do we go beyond that? One is that we have multiple sources of possible information. And none of these existing tools are structured to take in those multiple sources of information. None of them have dynamic call resolution. There's no unified model, and by what I mean by that is that there's a power that you get by structuring things according to standardized models. You then begin to understand how things work, and you can see how they work, and you can build on that basis to get leverage in expanding what it is that is capable. In other words, you don't really have a big picture of how everything works together. The best you're doing is getting queries that will provide you with some of the threads. The dynamic call resolution has to do with this kind of stuff. In some applications, there's only a small amount of this. In some applications, there's a ton of it. And so how big a problem it is depends upon your specific code base. But it is certainly a problem because it's a dead end that you don't know where that connection goes. So for the prior version or the existing version of ABL-DOML, I developed a source in a tool called Joe and Joe Analyst. This is product that was built on ProParse and ProRefractor, which you may have heard of. It uses call graph analysis to resolve many kinds of dynamic calls. For example, it will trace the calling history so that it will see that you've launched a super procedure, and then it'll find that you've made this call down here to something, and oh, look, that's up in the super procedure. It's like, okay, I know that those are connected. Now, it can't resolve everything, but it includes an unresolved call report, and it includes a mechanism by which you can provide hints so that the next time you do a pass on the code, it will automatically fill those in. So if you have a run value that comes out of a database table, because that's how you run your menus, then you supply the possible values that can show up at that spot, and it then makes those connections. If you have one of the things, those of you who have had the misfortune to experience old Varnet code will be familiar with this computed run for unit of measure conversions, where they would take the number for this and the number for that and glue them together into a program name and then run that program name in order to get the right transaction and the right cost method. It produces some very nice HTML pages with links that allow you to walk around with the code, and a very powerful search mechanism. The bad news, well, and then it also produces this bill of materials file, which serves as the import, the source of the import for my ABL to UML tool. Unfortunately, the tool is no longer being maintained. It has no support for any syntax in version 11. That may not be a problem if you've got a version 9 or version 6 application when you start off, but if you start to modernize it and you start sticking in version 11 syntax, bingo, you're broken. And of course, the fact that it's not being actively sold anymore and it's not being maintained isn't exactly a big attraction to decide that you want to depend on the tool. So the new source is a thing I call ABL to DB, which I will be talking about tomorrow afternoon in some more detail, and a little bit more today. It's still a work in progress. We're not quite there, but we're getting close to being able to replace Analyst as a source. And this is an open source project. It'll be up on OnlyHive. And I think it's something that will be very interesting to people as a tool in and of itself, even without it being the front end to ABL to UML. So, about UML, what is it? Some people know about it, some people don't. A lot of people don't know very much about it. UML stands for Unified Modeling Language. It was originally developed because there were multiple people walking around with their own methodology and their own little symbol system for drawing those methodologies. And people would say, well, I like part of this methodology, and I like part of that methodology, but they have conflicting ways of drawing things. This is very confusing. So they got together and decided on a common basis. Really quite an extraordinary thing to happen in the history of software, to have people do that kind of cooperation. And then let go of it into a standards community. It is a graphical language, but of course, underneath that graphical language, there's a database that has the repository of the actual information that produces the diagrams. And it is possible to interact directly with that database. It's very widely used for OO languages, although in varying ways. Sometimes it's a whiteboard thing that you draw a few stuff to talk to the team, and then when you got the idea, then you run off and you code. Other places will work through to a more detailed analysis and design, so that then you really have a tight specification of what it is that you go then hand code. And in the extreme, you actually feed the model into a transformation engine and out comes your code at the other side. And I'm working on that too. It has been enjoying some development for modeling legacy systems, particularly OO systems, but for some non-OO systems. But I will confess that when I started doing this, I was a little bit more of a pioneer than I expected to be at doing that. There are a ton of tools available, which run from the open source free to reasonably expensive. Lots of books, lots of expertise. It has grown from its original base to have a huge number of different diagrams that address different issues. There are a lot of those that are used in the analysis and design process. In reality, if you're doing the model to code stuff, you only need three diagrams out of the but for legacy code, you're really interested in the data models, which is kind of a class diagram for the database. Component models, which is subsystems and components and how they connect to each other. And the user interface models to get the usage structure and functional groupings. And we'll talk more about that. And I'll show you some examples. Some existing tools. Probably the most widely used one in the ABL community is Enterprise Architect, which isn't to say widely used, but most widely used. It's quite inexpensive. You can get a basic version of it for a couple $100, and that is probably all you need. If you want to really spend money, you can spend $800 and get the ultimate version, and I guarantee you that you won't use half of it. There's just too much stuff there. There is some support by Enterprise Architect for ABL and the Open Edge database. You can actually use an Open Edge database as the repository, although it doesn't perform particularly well. And there is stuff on OEHive and PSDN for add-ins, including the profile that I'm going to be talking about and instructions about how to set it up and language extensions so that you can, when you're doing your data model, it will know about open edge data types in the database. and one of those tools that's on PSDN is one that reads the dictionary or a .df to build your data model. The one on PSDN that Phil Magne wrote actually has a relationship guesser in it that tries to look for links between tables based on common fields. Depending upon your database structure, it may work fairly well or it may work absolutely abysmally. And unfortunately, it's not open source, so you can't fix it. So, what is a UML profile? A profile is a map from some particular domain or language into underlying UML concept that you're going to use to represent that domain or language. it uses stereotypes, which is a name that means a term from the domain mapped onto a construct in the UML. You can add constraints on what relationships are possible so that more things may be possible in UML than you allow in this profile. You can add tag values to, and you'll see some examples of that in a moment, that UML allows you to add tag values. the profile says what the tag values are to expect for this particular environment. So a simple example of that, I have a stereotype called OE program maps to the UML construct component, and it has some tags defined, path name to tell you where the source actually is on disk that you analyze, and two logical flags, has UI and has DA for whether there are user interfaces in that piece and whether or not there's database access in that piece. And you, in one of the structures is that it takes shared variables and makes them attributes of the component. So our project for a profile for ABL is to have a comprehensive standardized profile which people can share across sites, encouraging communication and supporting tool development, gives us a common vocabulary, and the open source profile is housed on OE Hive. The profile includes standards for the complete open edge schema, all properties, the physical layout, all indexes, the logical structure for foreign keys, whether or not you know what those foreign keys are or you have to deduce them is another question. And so here,
let's drop out and look at Enterprise Architect. And Windows 8, gotta love it.
So you can see up here at the top, we've got the data model that has a package for the metaschema in case your application accesses the metaschema. All of these examples are based on ABL to UML processing the source code for ProLint. So there's a section of information of the schema for ProLint, and ProLint happens to use Roundtable, so there's a section, a package for the schema for Roundtable, and it also includes the sports database for some sample stuff, and so there's the stuff for the sports database. So standards for code for programs and classes, distinction between a stereotype for a program, which is source code, and for compiled units, which are .Rs, structures for internal procedures, functions, methods, include files, and shared variables. So here we have, we can see the component model, a package for compile units, a package for include units, because of course they can be used in multiple places, a package for program units, and within the program units are organized into packages according to what directory they're found together in, hoping that that's a logical grouping. And then the programs within that. And then here you can see underneath that, these are internal procedures, and this one is public, and this one is public, and this one is private. So that it makes those distinctions and you can tell where something is likely to be used. So there are standards, stereotypes provided for code-to-code links. Those include super procedure invocation, running .p's or IP's in a .p, class method invocation, function calls, forward references, summary links the summary links is if I have a run link where the actual run statement is running an IP in some other persistent procedure, or I'm running it from an IP in my existing current procedure, and I'm running either a .p or an IP in another .p, the detail link is represents what actually happened at the run statement level. The summary links will then show that there's a .p to .p connection, so that you can look at either the detail or the summary in any particular diagram by suppressing or including certain links.
So,
this is a diagram that was created actually automatically based on the information that had been loaded in by ADLT-UML. The solid outside boxes are .p's, OE programs. The inside boxes are IPs. There's a public one. Here's a public function. Here's a private function. And the dashed arrows and solid arrows indicate that different status, so that you can tell immediately what kind of connection that is. And there are also standards for code to data links, references to table. The mode, whether it's a create or an update or delete, column references and the mode on those, whether you modify the update or you merely access it. It captures the complete where clause in the place where it was originally used, tied to internal procedures or functions, again at the same detail level, with summaries again by .p or class. So here we've got one of the tables from the ProLink database. We have the programs and the IPs and functions within that, and the update or read-only access to that table. And there is our standards to cover logical structure. This includes the menu structure. And each node in the menu which executes ABL code is then defined as being a functional unit. In other words, it's all of the code that you can reach when you push that button. So there may well be code that overlaps because it's used in multiple functional units. But you still also have an automatic way of identifying this functional unit. It's all the code that you can reach. So there are links from the menu selection to the functional unit, from the functional unit to the code. And here's a piece of that menu structure, which is pretty self-obvious, the kind of structure where a link can either be to another menu or it can actually be to a functional unit. This is a funny special case, which probably occurs in some other applications as well, where there isn't a menu option per se, but through configuration you get to different places, and that selection occurs as a result of the configuration. So we have a concept for covering that as well. So, what do we do to feed that process? ABL TUML, the version 1, it's open source, hosted on OEHive. I took pains in creating it so that things that are likely to change on a site-specific basis are well-identified and easily modified. It adheres to that publish category. It has a very tiny bit of OO in it because of when I wrote it. You could get rid of that little piece of OO if you wanted to. The new version of it will be entirely OO, however, because I think that's the right way to go forward. I will say one of my prejudices is, even if you're working on version 6 code, it's worthwhile having a version 11 development system to get all of the new stuff, and that will encourage you to move the code forward into the new capability. So I've gotten to the point where I'm not interested in making stuff backwards compatible to the Iron Age. Oh, right. It includes a tool for a dictionary tool. This version reads directly from the OpenEdge database to build the schema structures, unlike the tool on PSDN that reads .df. My new version reads a .df. That now seems to me like a better way to go about things, but if anybody actually wanted it to read the dictionary, that would be an easy thing to provide another component alternative. There's a simple structure that you use to create packages in that schema, like the package meta schema versus ProNet versus Roundtable. There currently is no foreign key guessing in there, but I think that's less important in the context of the ABL to UML models, because you have actual use shown. You don't need to guess at what the relationship might be, because you actually have the links between the code and the tables so that you see what the connections are between them. For the code portion, the existing field, the tool is reading that bill of materials file from Analyst. There are some multiple supplemental sources that are used to get your program descriptions and menu structure and package definitions. All of it updates the an OpenEdge database directly. That OpenEdge database has the Enterprise Architect schema in it. So it does that directly. There's a single super procedure that does all of that update, so it's one common place, and you either use it or you don't use that particular piece, but it's all there in one spot. And as I said, there's a structures for site-specific tables. You know, everybody does their menus a little differently, so you have to provide a structure that will allow you to input those. Program descriptions, path locations on disk, module descriptions. And there are several places where there are hooks for doing post-processing. that turns out to be convenient for certain kinds of code bases. One of the big sites that's using this has some funny little things that they do, and that there's a nice hook in there for the post-processing to handle that. Three examples. We have the ProLint that I've showed you. It's not really a production item, but it is a sample code base. One large company that's using it is CalTire. They have a very complex ERP system that started off as acquired from somebody, and then they modified it beyond recognition and added several additional modules and had a huge mess. And they decided that they needed to do some modernization. They wanted to move to a service-oriented architecture. They brought in Sonic because they had several hundred stores that they were interacting with via FTP. That wasn't always the best idea, but they have managed to repackage a bunch of stuff, and they're now using Sonic for all of that, and it's all working much better. And they're gradually migrating the application to a more open source, to a more SOA type structure. Nomadsoft in Argentina is using this tool, interestingly, to provide documentation to their customers. So one of the things that you get with your Nomadsoft package is a disk that's got all these diagrams on it that shows you what the structure is. Nomadsoft, however, I will say, is not using Analyst as a source. They wrote their own thing based on CompileXRF because they decided that they didn't need the IP level of information, which I think you'd really want if you were working, actually having to work on the code. So where do we go from here? Or more precisely in this case, where am I going from here? There are not a lot of opportunities to extend the tool. The version limitation on Analyst is a big headache. We want to keep this an open source project so that people can get it and not even have to pay anything for it. We want to utilize CompileXRF and Lisp, and want to explore the potential for supplementing this with information from a parser. The parser supplementation, I hope, will happen with the work as a spin-off from the work that's being done by Gilles Garay at Riverside. He's talking, I think, this afternoon about his tool. He actually has a wrapper around the parser from PDSOE, so we're guaranteed that it will stay current with new versions of Progress. And while the information that he's getting is not the information that I need, I'm hoping that I can build on his work to figure that out. If not, I'm going to have to go back and look at ProParse and see whether I can modernize it. As I mentioned, I've built this ABL to DB tool, which databases XRF and list information. Just doing that is not itself a new concept. They've been done in these proprietary systems, but many of those proprietary systems are, first of all, proprietary, so if you don't happen to have that software, then you don't have that available. Plus, many of them were written 15, 20 years ago, and there's more information in XRF than there used to be. So it's missing all of that additional information that you might possibly get. And so my goal is to come up with something that is much more complete and easily adaptable to different source code bases. And I think it's a tool that will have interest in its own right as an analysis support tool, quite aside from the fact that it will provide me with the information to build the ABL to UML model. Where there's no real dynamic call resolution, I have some dynamic call resolution in it now, where if you're analyzing a particular compile unit and you launch a persistent procedure, supered or not, then and then make a call later on to an internal procedure in that persistent procedure, it will find that and make that connection. But it won't make things like, you know, I launched in program A, I launched the super procedure in program B that was called from A, I run something and it's found in the super, but it's no connection to that compile unit, and there's not even a handle being passed in because it's super. Some of those things I expect to be able to do with post-processing analysis. There's a number of things that I know I can do in bringing out that. But worst case, I also will provide an unresolved call report so that you can find out what's unresolved, and I will provide a hint mechanism so that you can say, well, okay, I figured out what that one is. Let me store that, and the next time I do a build, it will get resolved automatically. Although I'll still know that it was a dynamic call. I don't yet have the full where clause. I'm exploring ways to grab that. But of course, I do have all of the data connections. And as I mentioned, there's this potential assistance in this process from the PDSLE parser. And you can do an awful lot of interesting things. I know I've done some of them in the past with ProParse, being able to walk the abstract symbol tree and find out just about anything that you want about that program. So additional goals for the 2.0 version, which have been accomplished. Some have been accomplished, some not. One was to move to OO, so it's now OO and very nicely structured and very clean in the places where you're supposed to do site-specific thing, you know, say, right here, right, put it right in the spot, and here's the kind of thing that you want to do if you have any of these family of possibilities. I have set it up so that it's very easy to decide that you want to use some pieces and not other pieces. Of course, there are some logical dependencies between them. You can't do code to data links if you haven't built the schema and the code structures. there are some limitations right now on the resolution of detailed calls, but I think I have all of the information necessary to resolve that. One of my original goals was to be able to do an incremental build. Nomadsoft seemed to think that was really important. I'm now questioning whether or not that's actually a good goal. Incremental builds have a lot of possible gotchas, where you know, you used to have connections here, here, and here. You now have connections here and here, and do you know well enough to get rid of that things that aren't there anymore? And I think that this is reasonably fast enough that really a kind of nighttime full build is actually a more sensible and secure way to move forward. I'm going to support repositories other than an open edge database, which also implies being able to support tools other than Enterprise Architect. I have some add-on pieces, that some of which exist in part so far, a bulk diagram generator so that you can get a whole bunch of a certain kind of diagram already drawn in there for you when you open the database, a connectedness tool, which is a tool for helping to identify clusters that might be good candidates for services in a service-oriented architecture. And there's a diagram generator tool that we used to have, It works in older versions of Enterprise Architect. It doesn't work in the current versions of Enterprise Architect. It's DB code. So I'm not real keen about diving in and fixing it. But one of these days, somehow, I'm going to have to do that. It's really a very cool tool because you drag an object onto an empty diagram, and then you open up this tool and you say, follow this kind of link, this kind of link, this kind of link, follow it for three links. Follow it, this one for two links, don't follow that one, don't follow this one. And you turn it on and bang, there's your diagram. All of the stuff connected for you. I should note that if you simply have two things that have a relationship, like two dot P's or something, and you drag both of them onto the diagram, the link between them automatically shows up. So it isn't as if you have to draw those each time. Those are already there. That's a part of what gets built. possible round trip integration. We'll see how that works. One of the things that I've certainly thought about is, so I have this legacy system and I have this model. Can I possibly change what's in the model and get a new piece out for my legacy system? Since I'm also working on model-driven development, where you go from a UML model to the code automatically, I'm not sure whether this is actually a sound thing to do. If the models that you use for model-driven development are not the same models as that you use here, so there's some real questions about that. And some more analytic reporting diagram impact analysis, and a tool for building, taking your custom-built diagrams and preserving them across builds. That one will come very early. We're going to make it. So in summary, what we have is automated generation of UML models directly from the ABL code and the schema. That's a reality today. The models are incredibly useful for working on a legacy system, because you get this nice, clear, graphic demonstration of what the connectedness is in the system, and you can see the impact in a way that you just don't from a report or a query, and particularly where it's easy in a query to miss some of the kinds of connections that may be important. And if you drag those guys onto the diagram in a UML tool, you'll see the connections, whether you asked for them or not. If one of the things that you want this for is because you're going to modernize your application, I think this is a very powerful first step to figuring out what the new application ought to look like, because it allows you to do things like say, well, I'm going to write a new application that's going to be OO. The customer table is a good candidate for an object in my new OO environment. So here, let's pull up the connections to the customer object and look at all of the code that interacts with the customer object, and that will tell me what kind of functionality that I should consider putting into my customer object rather than scattering it hither, there, and yon all through the code. Here's some resources. You probably want to get the talk rather than, you know, download the talk rather than try to copy them all down. Stuff on the eye, stuff on analyst, and stuff on Enterprise Architect. And with that, we have about 2 minutes for questions.
Question. You
didn't
mention anything about back-end queries, or did
you do that? Dynamic queries are a problem. Yes, no, dynamic, where, you know, dynamic anything is a problem because the information isn't there. So I haven't tried doing it yet. That's certainly something that I will take a look at. It's going to have to be something like you do with dynamic calls, in that it tells you there's supposed to be something here, but I don't know what it is, so you tell me.
Well, what, unfortunately, with our application, all of our dynamic queries have a very similar code profile.
Mm-hmm.
We all shove in the same variable name. The procedure looks the same, but similar. So is that something that we could write a little custom key for in this to kind of fix the flag?
Quite probably, yes. If not actually resolve it by providing it with some hints. And I will say, you know, it's possible to make an application so dynamic that it is unanalyzable. But, you know, that's reality. Conceivably, we've talked about that at various times in the past. The problem with your run information is, of course, which run? You know, that how do you ensure any kind of completeness in your coverage? Because there are things like engineer procedures that you run once a year, and you don't have to exercise them in the middle of this test period, then you don't notice it whatsoever at all. But I will say that the structure is there so that it's going to be very easy for somebody to decide either to ask me, you know, could you also do this other thing? And I very much encourage that because I'm very, very interested in adding additional capabilities to it. Or you do it yourself. And because it's open source, you can also contribute it back, you know, subject to me possibly printing it up, my own standards or whatnot, but definitely get back in there.
Is there any problems with scale? So for instance, if you had 8,000 value structure, what is the outcome? Is it one through another 8,000 plus boxes?
No, each diagram that you build, you only put things onto that diagram that you want. So even though you have a database that shows how everything is connected, you only put the things that you are currently interested in studying onto that diagram. The diagram generator helps you find all the connections to a particular thing, but the connections are all there. And if you only wanted to study, you know, this program and that table, then you drag those onto the diagram. That's
so
all you see. Yeah, I mean, one of the things certainly you can do is you can start off looking only at the summary links to see a larger scale picture. You have to start somewhere. You know, you have to have something, you know, I'm going to work on this dot P, or I'm going to work on this table, or something, and then look at all the stuff that's connected to that. Anything else?
So if I want to make use of this, what do I need to do? Just go online
and download the code.
I told you need the analyst?
Right now you'd need analyst. Later this summer you won't. You can use your the new version of this will support multiple tools. Enterprise Architect is terribly cheap.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what we're doing. So you're saying that's the best thing to do.
That's, I think that's a really good thing to do.
Right.
But I will be providing stuff that even should load into one or more open source UML tools. So you really can pick and choose wherever it is that you want to go. And I know for sure it will load into Rational Software Architect as well.
You mentioned the Enterprise Architect. Did you see the database with the sort of box story? Do you say it was a idea?
Well, I need to retest this with everything that's current modern versions, but historically when we've tried it, it works. But in order to make it very usable, you want to export it into a different kind of database. The problem, yes, I know I'm trying, well, I guess I should have wrapped up already. The problem is that the Enterprise Architect makes whole bunches of itty-bitty SQL calls in places that they could use a much larger query, and that does not perform well against an open-edge database.
Just saying, focus on performance, not doing analysis or calls. I don't
need
some
of that. Some of it is pretty unfriendly to use, but it varies. Yeah, I mean, the Enterprise Architect actually uses the Access Engine. So, and that works fine. And that's pretty good part of the problem. So, we're done. Thank you very much. And let me hear from you.